The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning. And maybe I should also say Happy Hanukkah, which started last night. Merry Christmas. Of course, today is December 25th. And maybe you're just celebrating that today, maybe the one day in the year when things kind of slow down here in the Bay Area, right? A little bit less traffic, things are closed, so maybe that's reason to celebrate too. I know that sometimes this time of the year we hear this expression, joy, or joy to the world. I was thinking about that. Joy to the world. To, right? This little preposition. Maybe we could play around with this. Explore it, switch it out. Maybe joy for the world. Joy from the world. Joy with the world. All these different ways to think about it. So that's a little bit what I'd like to talk about today is joy with the world. And as I was thinking about this, it occurred to me, I think the last time that I was here, substitute teaching for Gil so that he could spend time with his family on a holiday, was Independence Day, and I talked about joy on that day as well. So I'm not sure what that says about me, but maybe kind of, you know, making these holidays together, as well as, you know, joy is something to think about and to cultivate and to talk about. In my view, we don't talk about it enough. So here I am. I'll talk about it a little bit. But maybe before I talk about this idea of joy with the world, I want to do a little bit of sideline and give a deep bow to Sharon Salzberg. Some of you may have heard of her, some of you may have not. I recently listened to a talk. She's a Dharma teacher that was one of the very first people that came to the West and introduced this practice to the West. She was in India in the early 1970s, and came back to the West with Joseph Goldstein and Jack Kornfield, whom you may know. Joseph started a retreat center, and so did Jack, and they both have books, and Sharon Salzberg has books too. But I had I was just listening to a talk that Sharon gave almost 25 years ago on this topic about joy. And it made my heart sing to think about, here's somebody all those years ago, 25 years ago, trust me, I was not thinking about joy. I wasn't practicing. You know, I was busy with my own stuff. Let's just say that. And I had this great appreciation of this pioneer woman who had found this practice in a different country, in a different setting, and really understood and appreciated the power and wanted to share it with others. And so she came back to the United States and did share it. So I am borrowing very heavily from this talk that she gave all those years ago, which portions of it also got captured in a book. As I said, she's written a number of books. So this book is called Loving Kindness. So maybe I'll also say that Sharon comes to the Bay Area. I know she was here a few times this past summer. So if you're interested in hearing her talk. So if we reinterpret joy to the world as joy with the world, joy from the world, you can think of it as a type of sympathetic joy. So it's maybe a little bit awkward phrase. Sometimes also in the Buddhist teachings called appreciative joy, or sometimes just joy. Many of you may know that sympathetic joy is part of the Brahma Vihara practices. Brahma Vihara is also an awkward expression. It's a Pali word. Brahma is often translated as divine or heavenly, and vihara is a place of dwelling or abode. So sometimes it's called a divine dwelling place or heavenly abodes, but that's awkward. So often it's not translated, so we just call these the Brahma Viharas. And the Brahma Viharas are a set of four practices, and one way to think about them is this way. It's about having loving kindness, sense of goodwill, a sense of friendliness towards everyone, without exception. It's kind of a radical idea. Not kind of, I think it's a very radical idea. So when this wish of goodwill and loving kindness meets somebody who is suffering, of course it happens in the world, we ourselves may be suffering, then this loving kindness gets changed into compassion. This wish for them to be well and for their suffering to be alleviated. When this loving kindness and goodwill goes out in the world and meets somebody who not is suffering but is having joy, then it gets changed into sympathetic joy, appreciative joy. And that's what I'll be talking about today. And then the fourth Brahma Vihara's equanimity is recognizing that even though we may have these wishes, loving kindness, goodwill for others, things unfold the way they unfold with causes and conditions and completely independent, no, I shouldn't say completely, but very likely independent of our wishes for them. And so that requires an equanimity, an ability to hold things and to recognize that they are the way that they are without our getting unbalanced by them. So the four Brahma Viharas, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And of those four, the third one, sympathetic joy, is actually discussed the least probably in Dharma talks, if you're going to Google it, as well as it's the most difficult. In the scriptures, it talks about this. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit too, kind of recognize this idea of that what makes it so difficult and why is it difficult? It seems like joy should be straightforward. It's all something that we want. We all have the innate capacity to experience joy, so why is it something that's difficult? So we can start with maybe a recognition that in our lives we have a longing to feel connected to others and to feel love and to love ourselves. It's a natural expression. But we may recognize that instead of feeling connected and feeling loving, we may have this bewildering sense of separation, contraction, fear of intimacy. We may kind of crave love and connection. Instead, we may be feeling lonely. This is part of the human condition, and this is part of the suffering. Quote unquote suffering, I'm using this kind of in the Buddhist sense, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's some real, real pain in our lives, too. But with this practice of the Brahma Viharas, it can serve to uproot our personal ideas or mythologies of isolation and not being good enough or not deserving. And instead, with these practices, we can uncover this radiant, joyful heart and sense of love that all of us have within us. We may not always have access to it, but we all have it. And specifically, sympathetic joy, the practice of this and the recognition of it, can have a real great power to liberate us from, as it challenges some of our deep assumptions about happiness and joy and loss and aloneness. And it may counteract some of these experiences of these. It may serve as an antidote to some of these ill effects or these, there are some of these forces in the mind that are the opposite of feeling relaxed and open and loving. So there are a few ways that we can cultivate sympathetic joy. If you're familiar with this, probably the way that you've encountered this is through a meditation practice. The way that the meditation practice works is a little bit different than mindfulness, where, as you know, we allow whatever arises and we bring our mindfulness to that. In contrast, in Brahma Vihara practices in general, and sympathetic joy practice in particular, we're bringing our mind to something in particular. So if you were to do this as a meditation practice, just like mindfulness, you would sit in a meditation posture, but they always emphasize comfort, to sit in a comfortable meditation posture. I'll just say that when I hear this, I'm a little bit perplexed by this because, let's be honest, I'm as comfortable as I can get when I'm in meditation posture, right? I'm not sitting in a way that's uncomfortable, otherwise it's difficult to maintain. I do know that some teachers recommend you can, like, doing this lying down, if that's even more comfortable. The idea is to not feel like you're struggling or in a lot of pain, right? Of course, it's hard to kind of connect with our hearts when we are in a lot of pain. So we would adopt a comfortable meditation posture. Bring to mind somebody that we care about, somebody that we already love, somebody that's easy to have, to rejoice in, to have delight in their happiness. And so we bring to mind something, some happiness that they have, some gain, some source of joy. It doesn't have to be the biggest joy. It doesn't have to be the predominant experience in their life. It can just be some sense of a good thing that's happening in their life. And we would bring, would have this sense of this person, bring this sense of good thing that's happened in their life, and then we would repeat a phrase. And the phrase very often is a version of, may your happiness and good fortune not diminish. May your happiness and good fortune continue to grow. And we would repeat this over and over while keeping them in our hearts. I keep on touching my heart because it feels like kind of this experience in your heart. And we would continue to do this even though we may become bored with this, tired of this, we may forget the phrases and come back to them, but we would like continue having this sense of this goodness that's happening to somebody we care about and connecting into wishing it that it would continue to grow. And then Brahma Vihara practices are in fact a very systematic practice and are kind of integrated into our lives as well as integrated with each other. So if we were doing this to somebody that we cared about, after a while we would expand this to maybe a neutral person, somebody that we maybe don't know. Person at the grocery store is often somebody that I use, right? These clerks, I see them regularly, but I don't really know them. And then it gets tricky. Then we expand it to difficult people in our lives, people maybe we don't like, maybe people that tend to have little thorns in our sides that we have difficulties with, and we wish them happiness, that their happiness grows. And then it continues out to all beings everywhere, recognizing that there'll be people we don't know, people that we care about, people that we don't care about. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about how to do this. Like, I think that some of the real power of sympathetic joy and practice, and it can be very powerful, is when we come up against this, oh, but I'm not sure I really want that person to be happy. I'll talk about that a little bit specifically. But before I get there, I want to say that another practice that we can do to support this general practice of sympathetic joy is just to simply cultivate joy in our lives. And I talked about this back on July 4th when I talked about joy. But some of the things that I didn't talk about then are, one thing is to, if we have any guilt or uneasiness about our own happiness, about feeling good, about feeling joy, We can investigate those and see if we can soften them and let go of it, let go of them. In fact, feeling happiness, feeling joy, calm, well-being, ease is an integral, important, very integral, very important part of this practice. We cannot find more freedom, we cannot find more ease, we cannot find more love, well-being, peace in the world if we ourselves are not feeling some ease, some peace, love, happiness, well-being. Right, this practice talks is where the means is the end and the goal are the same. So it's to cultivate joy is an opportunity for us to think about what is our relationship to joy, what is our relationship to happiness and well-being, and can we soften anything that is not that doesn't support it, that instead makes us feel like, oh, maybe I don't deserve it. Or maybe that we feel guilty. Because there is suffering in the world, which is true. We all know this. But that doesn't mean we can't also have some sense of well-being or some joy when it arises. Maybe we can also let go or soften any ideas of any happiness or well-being we have that feels threatened. That it may be taken away, or others may take it, or that we kind of have to hoard it and cut ourselves off from the world. Otherwise, this any sense of calm or happiness or joy may be taken away. The truth is, your sense of joy or happiness will diminish. That's the way things work. But it may arise again too, right? Things arise and pass away. This is the more we practice, the more we see that. So if we can relax and just allow the happiness to be there, that movement of relaxation increases the happiness. That kind of letting go of this sense that we have to kind of hoard it, that the movement of letting go can also increase the joy. And then when it does go, if we are a little bit more relaxed and open, it can be a little bit less painful. And we can recognize and say, oh yes, things do pass away and arise again. That's the nature of the human experience. Another thing we can do to cultivate good is to remember some of the good things we have done, including coming here and meditating. Coming here and choosing to cultivate some calmness, choosing to cultivate some quiet. There's a sutta called the Mangala Sutta, in which the Buddha lists a number of blessings. Mangala means blessings. Lots of blessings of which that we can think about. So this kind of this idea of count your blessings in terms of, you know, just be aware of some of the good things in your life. This includes things of simple things, not complicated things, things that are available to most of us, all of us perhaps. Having a livelihood or a discipline or a hobby that we enjoy and that we can perform well. There's a certain amount of goodness in that. Maybe we can kind of count that as a blessing and rest in the happiness or joy there. Maybe we have a home, a place that protects us, that we've been able to make it kind of our space where we feel a little bit more safe, perhaps. Having a home, having friends, having family, opportunity to hear the Dharma and discuss the Dharma with others. Any sense of well-being or wisdom that we've cultivated through our meditation practice or through being here. So we can bring those to mind as a way to kind of cultivate joy or happiness. So those are some of the ways we can practice sympathetic joy with a formal meditation practice, as well as just cultivating joy in our own lives that helps us recognize it when we see it in others. And then when we see it in others, if we've been cultivating it, it's easier for it to arise. This is true for everything, right? The more we do something, the easier it arises, and the more that we can recognize it there. And this very practice of sympathetic joy counteracts harmful forces in the mind, like I spoke about earlier. This can be very powerful. When I think about this, I'm actually touched by this. When I recognize some of these harmful forces that I have in my mind, I've been thinking like, oh, this sympathetic joy thing is a good thing. So we'll talk about this. One of the first one is judgment. That is that we may have an idea. We may not even be aware that we have these ideas, but we may have these ideas that people should pursue sources of happiness or lifestyles in precisely the way we think is appropriate, right? That we think like, oh, we may think that other people's happiness that is derived only from those things that would cause us happiness is worthy to think about. There's a number of examples. I know that this happened to me recently. I was in my car and I had the window down. Somebody near me, I don't know if they had the window. Yeah, they must have had the window down a little bit. But their music was so loud. And it was not a music that I appreciated, let us say. But they were so happy. They were kind of like bopping around, you know, like this, maybe tapping the steering wheel. And so can we be happy when people are feeling happy, even though if it's not a source of happiness that we would have? Maybe alternative like lifestyles. Maybe there's individuals who have chosen to have very big families, lots of children, and love to talk about the grandkids that they have. Or maybe there's people who have decided to not have children. That's not the lifestyle that they've chosen. People who have just a few kids. So can we be happy for people who have whatever their lifestyle that they've chosen, the delight that they take in their families, or the delight that they take in choosing to not have children? So this practice of sympathetic joy, of having our happiness, becoming happy or taking delight in other people's delight, other people's happiness, even if the source of their happiness is not one that would bring us happiness. And in this way, it kind of can slice through our predilection to force the world to accord with our views. And it can highlight our ideas that we have of how we think what's an appropriate way to have a sense of well-being. And of course, while we're doing this, we also need to practice discernment. Because there may be opportunities or there may be occasions when people are seem to be happy or they're talking about they're happy and they may even express some giddiness. But we may see that they aren't seeing that they're causing some harm. Or we may see that their sense of giddiness is covering up actually something that is really, there's some suffering underneath it too. So sympathetic joy doesn't mean that we're happy whenever we see other people's happiness in whatever form. We bring some wisdom to this, like some authentic happiness that doesn't cause harm to anybody, whether it's the person that's experiencing the happiness or causing harm to others. Another way that sympathetic joy can really help counteract some of the forces in our mind is sympathetic joy, right, requires that we see that other people are happy, that we notice. But often when we see other people and we notice other people, we are comparing ourselves to them. This is a powerful force in the mind. It's very common. This idea that we get a sense of who we are or how we are by comparing ourselves to others. Am I better than this person? Am I not as good as this person? Am I the same as this person? This act of comparing is actually quite can be quite destructive, and it has a very kind of the destructive quality to it is because it has this painful, gnawing, restlessness quality. That is, if we were to come here, here's like an example, and meditate. Maybe we're sitting there and we're feeling restless, noticing that our mind is all over, but we haven't actually shifted our posture, we haven't moved. And we see, open our eyes and we see somebody that is sitting like really calmly and uprightly, and we may think like, oh, that person must be like really calm and blissed out, and here I am, I can't even keep my mind on my breath. And we kind of feel a little bit worse. Then we see somebody else who's moving around, shifting their posture, and like, oh, okay, well, at least I haven't moved yet. I'm a little bit better than that person. But then we may think about that person who's really still. Oh, maybe that person came to the first sit this morning. Maybe that they've... Oh, no, I'm sorry. We think of this about the person who's restless. And we think like, oh, maybe they came here first. And they're shifting their posture only because they've been sitting here for over an hour. Oh, I thought I was better, and now I feel worse. So we can see how it doesn't end, right, this comparing. It's impossible for this comparing to others to actually bring us some peace, to bring us some well-being. Because it doesn't actually matter whether we come up feeling better than somebody or worse than somebody, because it's the act of looking outside of ourselves that causes more restlessness and more unease. It's the act of looking elsewhere for a sense of who we are and how we are. And not only that, this comparing ourselves to others has this sense of competition, right? Has this, underneath it is this sense of, well, somebody has to win and somebody has to lose. But to the Buddha, there's a saying that he says that even all winners, whenever there's a competition or whenever there's a war or something like this, both the winners and the losers lose. The losers lose in the obvious ways we can imagine. They lose status, they lose property, they, in a war, they may lose loved ones, they may lose their own life. But winners lose also, because there then is this fear of revenge, of, you know, some, or this fear of what you've gained is going to go away, or this fear or this feeling of tenuousness that, oh, I only got this because of, maybe I didn't really deserve it and it can be taken away. So in this way, the winners don't really find a real sense of peace and ease either. So sympathetic joy is a way of looking at others and seeing their well-being, their happiness, their joy, but not with comparing. And when we feel joy at other people's joy, we're not comparing, we're just sharing in their well-being and whatever goodness that they are experiencing at that time. So the practice of sympathetic joy can help counteract this, the idea of the, what's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of it right now, but the mental force, that's what I was looking for. This kind of this compulsion to compare. That compulsion itself will not bring us a sense of well-being, independent of whether we think we're better than everybody or worse than everybody. Of course, when we look at others and see that they have some well-being, envy may arise also. And so this practice of sympathetic joy, just having joy when they have joy, can help counteract envy. Probably all of you know that envy is the inability to endure the success, the prosperity, or the happiness of others. Instead of feeling good and happy for somebody's feeling good, it gives us a more and more sense of dissatisfaction. It gives us a maybe highlights the things that we don't have, and we start to focus on those types of things in our lives. And envy can be really painful also because we cease to be centered in our own lives and instead are out there like, oh, this person has that. And we're like not noticing what the good in our lives, and we get to be a little bit off balance. I'm leaning forward in my posture because that's kind of how it feels. Like, oh, we're concerned about that envy over there. Envy can be really destructive. I've spent plenty of my times feeling jealous of people that had something that I felt like I wanted, a quality, an ability. It's painful. It's really painful. And the only way that I have found to counteract it or to work with it is to practice sympathetic joy the best that I can. And also to come back to my own life, to come back and say, okay, Diana, what's important to you? Can you align your life with your aspirations, with the things that inspire you? And, you know, it's take the focus away from out there, but instead to, can I cultivate the good? Can I acknowledge what I am doing? And of course, the newspapers and the news are filled with terrible things that happen when people are filled with jealousy and envy. It's not a productive emotion. So sympathetic joy, practicing that can reorient our perspective from looking at others with a sense of competition or they have something that we want that we don't have. And instead, feeling happiness when other people have happiness can give us a sense of openness, a sense of relaxation. Like we don't have to pretend that they don't have it. We don't have to feel constricted because we don't have it. Instead, if we can just allow, take delight in and allow happiness to be there, whether it's in them and whether it arises in us at that moment or not, but to not close ourselves down when we see this. And of course, it may happen that we may feel anger or uncomfortable when somebody that we dislike or somebody that we have difficulty with is in fact experiencing a gain of some sort, prosperity or happiness or well-being. This can be very uncomfortable. Like if we, for example, are in a room with a group of people and maybe there are other practitioners and they're practicing good speech and they're praising somebody that actually you find as a difficult person, but they're saying, oh yes, this person is a good person and listing their good qualities or something like this, and you may feel a little bit uncomfortable, like, really? I don't think so. I think that this person is elsewhere. Or maybe you feel like, wow, I can't believe this other people appreciate this person that is difficult. And we may feel a little bit of anger that they receive the good wishes or of these other people. Of course, we don't feel that with people that we care about. If we were to hear other people saying good things about people we care about, we like that and we would maybe even contribute. So this practice of sympathetic joy helps us recognize actually where do we have prejudice? Where do we have bias? Who are these people that we don't want other people to speak well of? Who do we not want to have goodness in their lives? I may highlight for us some biases or prejudices we may not be aware of. And then we can turn this around if we recognize that there are some difficult people. That what do we want for those difficult people? Do we really want them to have nothing but suffering? do we want them to really have more and more suffering for all of their lives? What does that mean for them, right? If they have nothing but suffering, if they never had any goodness or happiness or well-being, what would that mean for us if we had a mind state for all of our lives? We wanted other people in all of their lives to have nothing but suffering. Right? What kind of a constriction, what kind of a lack of ease would that engender in our lives if we always wanted somebody else or maybe even a whole class of people to not have happiness, well-being, ease, peace. So practicing sympathetic joy wherever we find happiness, and even for when we don't find, we don't know people, we may not have come in contact with a certain people that, you know, part of the Brahmavihara practice is to extend it to all directions, wherever they are. Maybe we don't know people that, you know, live in other countries or something like that, but we practice sympathetic joy. So maybe can we hold that everybody, whoever they are, may they have, may their goodness, whatever well-being they are, may it increase. May it not diminish. Another way that practicing sympathetic joy can help counteract some of the forces in our minds is that sometimes we may find ourselves, when we see somebody that maybe we're jealous of or maybe is a difficult person for us, we may have this sense of like, oh, can you feel a little bit less happy? Because your happiness is actually highlighting my unhappiness. You know, can kind of counteract that wish for diminishment of other people's well-being. And there's two things underneath that, kind of that wish for diminishment. One is there may be, may not be, a little bit of a sense of ill will or hostility or like your happiness. Can you stop with that? Ill will, of course, doesn't lead to greater ease and well-being and happiness. But our having this idea, can you have a little bit less so that I can have some more, may highlight this subtle underlying belief that we have that joy and happiness is a commodity, that there's a warehouse somewhere with all the happiness, and then if somebody has some, that means there's less for us. Saying it like that sounds a little bit ridiculous, but we often do have these ideas that, oh, there's a limited supply, and if somebody has some, then there's less for me. When in fact, this isn't true, right? If we really were to think about it, we know this isn't true. But there may be this subtle idea that if others have this, then maybe there's less available for ourselves or less available for our favorite people. I know that sometimes here when we have these potlucks on Sundays and sometimes during other practices that we do here at IMC and elsewhere, there's a practice that we do that can counteract this whole idea of happiness and joy and other good things being a commodity and being there being a static, fixed amount in the world. And that is when we share the benefit of our practice with others at the end. Sometimes we will do this with a meal, others have the benefit either of this practice or may they have the benefit, feel nourished also. And so when we do that, we know that, right, that any benefit we received doesn't get diminished when we are sharing it with others. Instead, it may actually grow, right? This idea that we don't have to hold on to it makes and we offer it with openness, makes the benefit grow, because it's beneficial to offer things freely, to not be kind of hoarding them or having a greediness about them. So this idea of sharing the merit, sometimes it's called, or offering the benefit to others, is exactly the same as joy and happiness. When we, that there is no static, fixed amount. They are boundless. They are limitless. There can be no end to the amount of happiness in this universe, in this planet, in this room. Right? That it's, there isn't a set limit and that's it. Right? No more for us. I don't know, somehow thinking about that, this boundless quality that it can't end, makes me feel myself, kind of like gives me this openness and this spaciousness to this idea of joy and happiness. All of us in this room, all of us in Redwood City, all of us in California, all of us in the United States, all of us on the planet, everybody in the seas and in the air, all of us can have a sense of well-being, joy, happiness, however that gets interpreted for these different types of beings. So practicing sympathetic joy kind of helps tap into that and may counteract any ideas that we have that if other people have good things, good qualities, then somehow there's less for us. And then one more force that gets counteracted with sympathetic joy can be a type of selfishness. That when we have a selfishness, we may, and this is particular for things, maybe objects that we own, but more specifically qualities that we think that we have, we may feel that we need to guard them and hide them, that no one else can have benefits from them or to take them. This can be things like knowledge that we have, or ideas that we have, qualities that we have, faith, compassion, joy, friends that we have. We may feel like that we want to kind of like keep them and have this sense of, oh, these are mine and I don't want anybody to take them. And when this kind of feeling of these are mine, I'm kind of holding my arms here, like, right, it's a contraction, these are mine and I don't want anybody else to take them. When that movement, that feeling gets really strong, then we start to begrudge other people who have the same qualities, who may also have friends, who may also have those mental qualities, intelligence, faith, compassion, calmness, those things. So sympathetic joy instead is, as I said, it's kind of reorients ourselves to this openness and to the sharing that all of us that can have friends, can have faith in our practice, can have calmness, that there isn't a set amount. So as I've been going through this talk, I thought like, wow, I'm talking about all these forces in the mind that are not so happy actually, right? That I'm talking about how a sympathetic joy can counteract them. So I feel myself feeling a little bit like, wow. A little, as I recognize that sometimes I have moments where I have these selfishness or envy or not wanting to, you know, this fear that other people are going to take some of the things that I hold dear. So sympathetic joy is a way to counteract that, is a way that when we see others or we imagine others to have happiness, joy, well-being, we just simply take delight in that. We just simply take delight in the little things we see in others that are bringing them happiness, bringing them some well-being. We take delight in the things that we see in ourselves, whatever benefits we've had from this practice. We take delight in the blessings that are in this world, in our lives. So sympathetic joy is a way to kind of orient us towards the good things and helps us with this practice, helps us highlight where are we not able to kind of take delight in the good things. I could give a whole Dharma talk about how we need to pay attention to some of the not good things too. That's part of this practice, right? Our life has good things and not so good things. I don't want to kind of be a Pollyanna up here and say that we only should pay attention to the good things. But Rick Hansen, some of you may know, he's a teacher, Dharma teacher, as well as a neuroscientist, I believe. And he says that our minds have this, I like this expression, a Velcro for the bad things and Teflon for the good things. So sympathetic joy is a way for us to have a little bit less Teflon for the good things. Good things exist in our lives too. Good things are in the world too. So with that, I wish you a wonderful day. And may you find something today that you can take some delight in. Whether it's seeing the delight in others, seeing the delight in yourself of something good that has happened, or maybe some delight that you're imagining is happening. Thank you.